Hello again and welcome to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. It's a podcast for and about voice actors or anyone interested in the most fascinating of instruments, the human voice. And many of my compatriots and friends are from the world of radio. And this gentleman is certainly part of the radio world and has been in my universe for a long time. His name is Bill Smith. He's currently the production director for Entercom, which is more than how many stations now as we speak, Bill?
You mean nationwide?
Well, no, just in the Boston area.
It's WRKO, WEEI, WAAF, and a new R&B station, which is the classic R&B station. It's WKAF. They're really good.
And of course, as we record this podcast, we're months away from a whole slew of others joining the family.
That CBS Entercom merger, they're calling it. But I guess they're still ironing out all the details for that thing.
Well, let them iron those details out.
That's
We've got
right.
more important things to do. First of all, it's great to see you. We've been friends for many, many years, have worked in the same building at different stations at the same time, which is interesting. But I want to talk about your radio background. But you've been at the production headquarters now for about 22 years, something like that?
1995. The first time I was ever fired was at WBOS. A man who shall not be named. In fact, you tipped me off. You overheard a conversation that said something about we're going to fire Bill Smith on Friday. And you said, you came to me. I don't know if you remember this.
I sort of do.
You came to me and you said, look, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I don't want to be the guy that's always remembered for being that guy. But it was the most wonderful thing. You told me I could prepare.
I wanted to help my friend. By the way, I wasn't far behind.
Well,
you know, that wasn't a long time for me at that place.
The guy that pulled the trigger on me, nobody liked him.
Yeah.
So I made it a little bit rough on him while he was pulling the triggers. I knew it was coming. He said, why don't you come on down to the office and we'll have a chat after the show. I said, oh, great. What do you want to talk about? Oh, well, why don't you just come on down? We'll talk. So I went into the office, and sure enough, he's standing there. And I have to let you go. But it was interesting how 2 weeks prior to that, this kind of a weasel, I think if he's listening to this podcast, he knows who he is.
Yeah, he's probably not, because I think he went into the car mat business after this.
He may have, but he said something about we're walking down the hall. And I kind of knew something was up at this point when he comes up, puts his arm around me and says, you know, the station sounds great, and you're really such a strong asset. And I'm thinking, wow, what's he leading up to?
Yeah.
Something's going on. And then I heard from you, and one thing led to another. That was the first time I was ever fired, which was an interesting experience. I decided I didn't want to be in radio anymore after that because things had changed. The corporations were taking over, and Wall Street was moving in. And it seemed to me that they took what I considered to be an art, being on the radio. You got to think, you got to create, you got to do stuff, you got to think on your feet. And then suddenly, near the end, I was reduced to reading cards.
Sucked the life right out of the art form.
The 08 break, you will say this, coming up at, and then we're going to 10 in a row. I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. So I got out, and I did have a small bag of severance money, which was nice, and I had some savings. So I decided I'd take my time and look for another job. And about maybe 6 months went by, the money starts to dwindle. I start thinking, oh, what am I going to do? And I got a call from Jerry Williams, the great Jerry Williams.
For those who don't know the name right off the top, he's considered the dean of talk radio, not only in Boston, but Philadelphia, Chicago, National Radio Hall of Fame, etc.
And I met Jerry when I worked at WBZ.
Yes.
And for some reason, we struck up a friendship. We always got along. And out of the blue, the phone rang one day. I was at home looking for a job. He goes like this. I pick it up. I say, hello, Bill Jer. Hi, Jerry. Can you do production? I said, yeah, why? There's a job open at WRKO, and I'll put in a word for you. I said, well, that's great. I'm okay. And I got the job. That was 1995, and I've been doing it ever since.
Now, let's back up a little bit, because as a radio guy, you and I started in the old days when you did everything. I mean, you certainly did the disc jockey thing par excellence. You're one of the best. But you also knew how to write, because you had to, and you knew how to produce a commercial on the station staff. That was one of your jobs, right?
Well, that was one of the things that you learn when you first get into the business. You learn about, number one, it's a sales job. You're either selling the radio station or you're selling the tune.
Right.
You're selling the format. You're selling. But it's not so much a sales thing as it is you're creating something that you want to be attractive. So if you're going to write a commercial, you don't want to write a, man, you can be assured of looking your best when you shop the sale going on now for 20% off, blah, blah, blah. You know, you tune out. So you try to be creative when you're doing that stuff. But it also applies to introducing a guest, introducing a new piece of music, taking a phone call, whatever it is that radio is. You try to perfect that, and it seems to me that corporations have sucked the life out of it.
Right, and there's an interesting little stat here about you, and I asked you to send me over a little bio information, and it says here, May 1, 1971, started in radio in Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. By the way, I've been to Columbus, great city.
I love the city.
On a dare, no experience. How'd you get the first gig?
I was leaving California. My girlfriend said, goodbye. I'm going back to my boyfriend, Buster. I said, what?
His name was Buster?
Buster. So I got in my Volkswagen Beetle, and I headed back home to Massachusetts, not knowing what I wanted to do. I think I was 24 years old, somewhere around there. I had no clue what I wanted to do. I'd done some drafting. I'd worked in a factory. I worked in a lumber yard. I did all sorts of different jobs. And this was after my military stuff. We went to Vietnam, did all that. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other thing. But she said she was going back to Buster, so I got in my car and I headed east. And I got as far as Columbus, Ohio, where my sister had married a terrific guy, Ted. And we're in the garage on the day before I was about to leave to come back to Massachusetts, still not knowing what I wanted to do. And I heard a guy on the radio. At the time, you couldn't buy beer on Sundays in Ohio. And the guy on the radio says, man, you can be sure to look in your best when you shop the sale going on now.
There's that copy again.
There it is. So I said to my brother-in-law, after drinking several cans of this ale from Florida called Hoppin' Gator, and I said, Ted, who's that guy? I could do that. I could do that job better than that guy. And he reached in his pocket and took out a $20 bill. It's a true story. He put it on his wooden workbench, took a screwdriver, and bang, he put it right through. And my brother-in-law says, you think that guy sounds like a hillbilly? And I said, I do. He said, you think you can get that job? I said, I do. He said, that $20 bill right there is yours. All I want you to do is come back with a signed job application. And I'll give that to you. You don't have the nerve to get down there and apply for that job. I said, yes, I do. He said, no, you don't. I said, yes, I do. So the day ended. Following morning, I got up. I got dressed. I went down to the corner of Gay and High Streets, where WTVN was located. I went to the 16th floor of the Buckeye Federal Building. The door opened up. Pete Gabriel was standing there. Pete was about 6'10". And he had a big, booming voice and a mustache. And he said, can I help you? I said, I'd like to apply for a job in broadcasting. Oh, really? He laughed. I said, yes. He said, well, where have you worked? I said, okay. I got to think on my feet. I said, well, Boston and San Francisco when I was out there. And I said, and when I was in the Navy, I was in Hawaii. He said, oh, Boston, San Francisco, let's walk and talk. So we went down a hallway to a small studio, and he said, did you ever see the Gates 2300 board or whatever, whatever it was? I said, no, I've never used that one.
Yeah.
He showed me how to use it. I was the guy in high school that would, when they would say, we're going to see a movie, I would be the guy that would go get the AV equipment, hook it up, because I knew where all the wires went.
Okay. And
when I was in a band, when I was in high school, I was the sound guy. So I wasn't too intimidated by the technology, but I stood there and I watched the guy put a record on the turntable. It was beautiful music. He queued it up, showed me how to do that, and ran the whole thing. He said, no, when that one ends, then you do this one. He said, just like that. Over to the other record it started. I said, oh. So I had that going. He said, why don't you try it for a while? And I sat there for an hour while he said, I'll be in my office. And I played these records. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was fun. And I thought, after an hour, I will call my brother-in-law. I got comfortable with it. I called my brother-in-law. He picked up the phone. I said, Ted, turn to 96.9 FM. He said, nobody listens to that. I said, I know, but do it. So he's in his garage, and I hear him scrolling down the dial. all the stations are going by, and finally I can hear on the phone, he's got the same station that I'm playing. And he said, that's it. I said, all right, stand by for a second. Hold on a second. At the bottom of every hour, I had to turn on the microphone, give a weather forecast, say my name, say this is, at the time it wasn't WTVN, that was the sister station. It was WBUK, and then I would start the next tune. And he heard me on the air say my name, and I could hear him saying, holy bleep.
Right.
Sandy, come quick. Your brother's on the radio. I could hear him through the phone. I'm trying to push the phone away from the microphone because I could hear him swearing and everything. I got away with that. And that was the first job. That was the very first job.
Let me just stop you for a second. Yeah. That's a great story, but the way you tell it is great. And I think that's what makes you and people like you and me drawn to this medium, because we love to tell stories.
Stories. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I could just picture that whole event and that whole sequence of events. And, of course, the fact that you actually proved that you were doing it by being on the air. That was a daring move.
Right then and there. And that guy, Pete Gabriel, he was the best first program director that anyone could have had, because he knew I was a rookie. He knew I was totally BSing him on the way in, but he knew I wanted that job and I was curious.
It's funny you mentioned the accent. I've been in Columbus, and it's not too far from Kentucky, right?
No, it's the next state.
Next state over. Yeah. So you got a lot of that kind of voice action there. But were you born in this area, right?
Yep.
Okay, meaning New England.
Yeah.
Were you devoid of the regional accent?
Nope. If I wanted to go get some fried clams, I wanted tata sauce. That's right. And a Harvard yard, and I parked my car.
Gansett.
Tomorrow. And Pete Gabriel took me aside and he said, let me tell you something. He said, I think you've got some potential here, but you do have a regionality. I said, what's that? He said, well, park the car. I said, I don't have an accent. He said, no, you do. I said, no, I don't. He said, yeah, you do. So we did the back and forth thing again.
Right.
He said, here's what I want you to do. He said, if you really want to succeed in this business, you can continue. Just be yourself. There's nothing wrong with having a Boston accent. He said, it's just that's the way it is. But if you want to move ahead, he said, the industry requires maybe less of that. He's being very polite.
Very diplomatic.
Very polite. So he said, here's what I want you to do. He said, I want you to pick somebody on the radio station that you like listening to. And the guy that I like listening to was named Bob Connors. He was on in the afternoon. And Bob had this really nice voice, and he spoke very clearly, and he spoke slowly and deliberately, and he was very good. So I would listen to him, and Pete Gabriel, the program director, said, emulate his style. Not imitate, emulate, he said. And he gave me a list of words to practice. Harvard, not Harvard.
That's the one.
Tata sauce. And it's not sauce, it's sauce.
Yeah.
And so I practiced all of that until it became a habit. And I ironed out most of it. But still, to this day, if I see the word H-O-R-S-E, it's Haas.
Haas.
If I see H-O-R-N-S, it's Hans.
Well, it's interesting because this is all about voice and how we use our voice and how we tell stories. Your ears, more important, your ears are as important as your voice box, aren't they? Because for you to hear that for the first time and then recognize it and then practice your craft, and we should mention, we're going to jump around a little bit, but you moved to Boston back home and hit some of the biggest stations at the time, and then were part of the FM revolution, if you will, soft rock. But I mean, hearing that and being able to switch gears, whether you're doing an up tempo or a low tempo, that's an art. It's a gift, I think.
I don't know. Maybe it's a natural thing that happens. Maybe it's something that just sort of happens. But how many times in your own studio, you record a lot of people, you'll record someone for the first time, and they sound pretty good. And as soon as they hear themselves played back, they go, oh, my God, that's what I sound like. I sound terrible. That's not me. My God, please don't play that.
Exactly.
And I had that same thing. I went through that same thing. The first time I heard myself on the radio, I thought, or not even on a radio, I had to do a spot for Columbus Livery Service. That's another thing Pete told me to do. He said, you're going to be in this business, you got to learn how to write. He said, you write and you announce. So he said, I need a 60-second commercial for Columbus Livery. I said, okay, I didn't know what livery was at the time. I was just a kid, and I thought livery was like a horse stable or something.
Yeah.
And he said, you're close.
Like Gunsmoke, right.
So I crafted, I spent all night, because he wanted it the following morning, I spent all night writing a 60-second commercial for Columbus Livery Service. I had all the facts there, the address, the phone number, all the stuff, and I gave it to him. He looked at it. He said, "Hey, this is pretty good." I said, "Thanks, Pete." He said, "But I forgot to tell you, it's only a 30-second commercial." Oh. He said, "Can you cut this down?" I said,
Sure.
No, of course. Yep, no problem. So I went back and slaved over this thing. How do I take all of this information and condense it down to 30 seconds? I did. And you know where this is going. I brought it back to him. He said, "You know, this is terrific. I need a 15-second version of this. Everything that you say here, I need a 15-second version." And what you learn after a while is how to say as much as possible in as few words as possible, but you have to be descriptive, and you have to be a bit animated, and you have to express yourself. And I don't know, it was a big exercise, and it's helped to this day.
I don't know if you've ever kept track, but I would venture to say thousands of commercials and promos since you began just this one gig at RKO and Entercom. Thousands, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you're like me, but I feel I'm better today than I was 3 days ago.
That's
or yesterday even.
Yeah.
In other words, this is the kind of work where there's always room to tweak and come up with something new, innovative in your voice.
I talked to the director of the movie Bonnie and Clyde, and forgive me, I've forgotten his name. He was in the lobby.
George Roy Hill.
Waiting for an interview.
George Roy Hill, I believe.
Okay. And he was with a guy who was going to interview him, whose name also escapes me. But I'm sitting there. We're just having a chat, just small talk. And he said, "Well, the guy's late." I said, "He'll be here. No worry. No problem." I said, "So what was it like?" I asked him to create this movie, Bonnie and Clyde. He said, "You know, I can't watch my own stuff. I can't watch my own movies." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Because I'll be watching it and I'll think, why did I pan just 3 degrees short? Why didn't I leave this dialogue in? Why did I have the light so dark over here? Why did I have this long shot?" He said, "It's never over. It's like and it was interesting. Here's a guy who's won an Academy Award for a giant movie that everybody knows. And he said he can't stand watching his stuff because everything needs to be tweaked. It's never over. It's never finished."
And I apologize. I think I might have blown that. I think it's Arthur Penn. But, yeah, Arthur Penn directed it. Sorry about that.
You're fired, George.
George Roy Hill's a pretty good director, too. So here we are. Before we get to the craft and the fact that you're like a MASH unit, you got to really pump this stuff out. And we'll talk about that in a second. You were part of something kind of cool that happened in this city and elsewhere, but a lot of it was centered here. Mm-hmm. The soft rock revolution. The fact that all of a sudden on FM, instead of beautiful music, we were listening to rock and roll, but a different kind.
Yes. Right now, it's the same stuff you can find on XM radio on channel 17.
Yes.
They're calling it yacht rock.
Yacht rock, yes.
But it's all the great stuff from the 70s. And it was interesting. I've forgotten the year. I think I wrote it down. It might be 76.
76, Morning Drive at WEZE.
WEZE was at 1260 on the AM dial.
Exactly.
The great Clark Smith was programming that station, and everyone was asking, why would you want to program an AM radio station? And it's a low wattage radio station. And Clark, in his own inimitable style, would say, "I have an idea." And so,
was that in the window at the time?
The
at
one
the
right
Park
there,
Plaza?
Park Plaza, okay. Right there, the window right in the front.
Yeah.
And Clark developed this soft rock format. This was his baby from scratch. And he called me from WBZ and asked me if I would like to come and work at the radio station. I said, sure. And that's all the stuff we played. Only it's interesting, if you were listening to XM Radio now and you listen to Yacht Rock on XM 17.
Yacht Rock, yeah.
Yeah. They have all those tunes, but the one thing that they didn't have that we had at WEZE and then later on at WEEIFM is this version of jazz, and it wasn't, what's the one, not smooth jazz. It kind of was, but it was cool jazz. It was George Benson, Michael Frank, so there were vocals in there. I can't even
think. Spyro Gyra?
Oh, there was a lot of Spyro Gyra.
Yeah.
That sort of
remember
stuff.
That.
And Chuck Mangione. And it was just great stuff that we sprinkled in with all of that music. And it created a texture. And there was also an on-air laid-back genuineness that Clark sort of fostered. And he didn't hire you to perform the way he wanted you to perform. He hired you because of who you were. And that was your your style. That's who you were, mm-hmm. rather than what you could become.
Yeah.
And that station took off like a rocket. It was really a fun time to work there.
Oh, you were part of a great group of announcers. Hillary Stevens, who I ended up working with for years.
Yep.
Dick Gunton, I remember.
Dick Gunton. I haven't seen Dick or heard from him in a long time. I hope he's
okay. But no, seriously, it was a beautiful. And I remember when I was working at RKO on the AM side in the late 70s, everybody I knew, everybody who listened would say the same thing. Yep. Well, I listened to you because I don't have an FM in my car.
Yeah.
And then when I went to FM, they were just the opposite. I went to FM and they said, well, I listen to you, but I really like the AM because I really want to know what the traffic is.
Well, it was very interesting. I was doing middays on WEEI-FM. And one day out of the blue, and the numbers were great, there was 1 hour, the lunch hour, was all pre-recorded. It was voice tracked. It was live up until noontime. And then it was voice tracked so I could take an hour off for lunch.
Right.
And then I'd come back at 1 o'clock and we'd be live until the end of the show. And that 1 hour from noon to 1 o'clock was the most highly rated hour. And I would just sit there and go through the motions. But one day, because the numbers were really good, I get this call from a guy named Harry Nelson. Harry Nelson was the program director at WRKO. And he said, hey, Bill Smith. He said, I'm gonna take you out to lunch. I'll buy you a $20 egg over at the Colonnade.
That sounds like Harry.
Yeah, so I said, no, well, I don't know. He said, come on, I want to talk to you. He said, I don't care what you're making right now. I'll double it. I said, well, okay, well, what if I'm making $100,000? Well, I know you're not. I said, okay. So I went and talked to him. I said to myself, you know, it's a good gig that I have right now, but it never hurts to talk. So he said, I want you to come to RKO. I said, I'm not going to go back to an AM station. It's not going to happen. He said, no. He said, look, we're at the low end of the dial, and I can tweak that thing and make it sound like a jukebox. He said, it'll sound great, big bottom. He said, but what I want from you is you know all the music, the soft rock music.
Right.
And he wanted to sprinkle that in with the hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, but then he made me a beautiful offer. He threw the money on the table and said, that's yours if you want it, but I got to know soon. I thought about it. It was a heartbreaker. I went back and I told Clark Smith, I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
He was so gracious. He said, well, it's radio, it's the business, and you see an opportunity, go ahead. And I came to RKO, and that's where I met you.
And do you know exactly where you met me for the first time? I'll tell you where you met me, at the Boston Marathon in the WRKO mobile studio. And we had never met, and you were sitting behind the glass in the mobile studio, basically on the air.
Crowds of people.
Thousands of people, obviously, the marathon, and that's when we first met.
Wow.
And
that was the day that Mayor White came down the street without an entourage. You were in that.
Of course.
And he glad-handing everybody. There he was Mayor Deluxe. Yeah.
But let's take it up to where we are now, and boy, 22 years literally the one-armed bandit here, because you've had to do so much. If people tune to WEEI, which is the number one sports station, or WRKO, they are going to hear you several times an hour doing different things. I mean, you're doing promos, you're doing legal commercials about how the contest does work.
Oh, yeah.
The contest disclaimers. Yeah. You're doing naturally, you're doing commercials, you've produced jingles. You're doing it all.
Yeah, it's fun. And I think I have the most fun job of anybody at the station. And I hear people complain every now and then about their jobs. Everybody complains about their job. They complain about their boss. They complain about, oh, I'm tired. And I do too. But what's nice is I have the best job. Every day is different. It never gets boring. The sales aspect of it, let me just say that I completely understand and respect what those people have to go through every day.
It's a grind,
man. It is. It's not easy being a salesperson, but they're the backbone of the industry. Nobody gets paid if they don't do their job. So what they do is they'll go out and massage a client and say, hey, you should advertise with our station, and we got a guy who can do your commercial. And so they'll come, and sometimes they'll ask for a jingle. Sometimes it'll just be a commercial itself. And the joke around the station is that if you listen to a ball game, that I'm on more than Joe Castiglione.
Who's the announcer for the Red Sox?
Yeah, they go for a commercial break, and I'm on almost all the commercials.
I remember I called you one time when I was watching a movie, And the title again escapes me. Here we go again. Sissy Spacek was in the film. It was a thriller. You remember the movie.
In the bedroom.
Thank you.
Let me tell the story. I'm sitting there at the station one day, and I get a call from Jordan Rich. He says, "Hey, buddy, you're in a movie." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, you're in a movie." I said, "What movie?" And he told me, "In the Bedroom."
Yes.
He said, "Sissy Spacek movie." I said, "No, I'm not." So sure enough, I go and I see the movie. It's an 8-second clip. It's, I don't even know how far into the movie it is, but there's a ball game on the air in the background while there's some dialogue going on with Sissy Spacek and some other people. But in the background, the radio's on, and you can hear 8 seconds barely of me. And Jordan said, "Hey, you're in a movie." And I thought, and so this is a joke. I'm thinking, "Hey, how about that? I'm famous." Well, he said, "No, you should get paid for that." I said, "No, I don't think so. I think you called somebody because I got a call and said, listen, I understand you're in a movie." I said, "Well, that's what I hear." And so they went ahead and found out that I indeed was in the movie.
Yes.
And this is one of the nice things about this business. And I can only imagine how some of the local guys around here who are on screen in some of these movies, their paycheck must be wonderful.
It
must be a good thing. Because of your call, I shouldn't say this now because you'll say, where's my cut?
No.
But I got a check for $782.
Oh, God bless you.
Out of the blue.
Good for you.
And then every quarter, I get another check. It's diminishing as it goes along, but I still get them. The last one I got was last week. It was for 34 cents. I think it cost them more to send me the check.
Oh, that's so funny.
But it's amazing. I'm still in that system all because of those 8 seconds.
Well, the voiceovers, I always talk about this as really being a legacy craft, because even a commercial for some carpet company somewhere, there's a lasting legacy. What I mean by that is you created the spot, you created this idea that's now audio fresh, and someone aired it, the station aired it, and hopefully, and most likely, people went to the store because of that, and who knows? I mean, but the fact that you do something that winds up in a film, a major Hollywood film, it's there forever.
Yeah,
right?
it is there
it's
forever.
It's the coolest thing.
Some of these things have a very long shelf life. For instance, the Bernardi commercial. There's a commercial for Bernardi.
I bought two cars at that place because of you, by the way.
Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life.
Yes.
We sat around one day trying to come up with an advertising campaign for them. And the phrase, Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life. And for some reason, I thought, geez, you know, there's a jingle in there. And they had mentioned that they were looking for a jingle, and I had never done a jingle. So I thought, I'm friends with tons of musicians.
Right, your own home studio and do a lot of producing.
Some of Boston's very best, and that's no exaggeration. These guys are really great players. And I thought, I'll just get them together, and we'll create this Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life commercial. Well, it turns out the guys that I really wanted were in Latvia at the time they were touring. And the big rollout, the big presentation we were going to make to the client was the following day. I thought, my God. So I sat down at the keyboard. I added drums. I added bass. I added all this stuff. I came up with the melody for it. And then I had to sing it. And I'm no singer. So, you know, it's take one, take two, take three, take four, take five. Hey, that wasn't too bad. I'll keep take five. Okay, now I got to double that. So take two, take three, take seven. So that's good. Okay, so I'll keep that one. And after a while, they were like, when you listen to that Bernardi commercial and you hear Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, it sounds like there are 10 people.
Oh, yeah, you overdubbed it beautifully.
Only each one of those overdubs, it took I don't know how many takes for each one. It was terrible, but it worked. And we played it the following day and they liked it. And I have to say, and I do a lot of car commercials for a lot of different companies. They're one of the absolute best. They're nice people. They're a different kind of vibe going on in there. Yeah, nice people.
How do you, just curious, how do you keep your voice in the shape that it's in? Because I've been a friend of yours for decades, literally, and I've also heard you. I hear you every day.
Yeah.
And your voice is as vibrant and has as much energy and as much clarity than it's always had.
Well, that's a nice compliment. I smoke a lot of pot. I drink a lot of Johnny Walker Blue. No, I'm kidding. I know that this is how I make my living, so I just treat it gently. I don't really do anything special, but I drink a lot of water, and the water's always good. But for the most part, I just I take it easy. I try not to yell at my dog too much. But, Yeah, it's really nothing special. It just sort of happens. I'm lucky.
On the resume that you worked up for me, nowhere does it say you've done any acting, any either theatrical or screen acting and all that.
I'm acting right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But but really, what we do in the voiceover business is voice acting, because we're creating this image and persona in whatever we're delivering, even if it's something straight.
Well, they call it voice acting, and I think they do that for a reason. I mean, it's what it is. You're basically you're not being seen, so you have to be expressive. And one of the guys I love is Mike Rowe.
Oh, absolutely. Dirty Jobs guy.
Oh, yeah. In addition to having one of the most beautiful voices on earth, this guy could read the phone book and make you stay tuned. He's really, really, really good, and he's got a great personality as well.
Well, personality is the thing that cuts through, and a production person who's pumping out so much material, there's also something that you do that I will compliment you on, and that's consistency. No, I'm serious. I mean, to be consistent, to put out a product, and some of it's, you know, multiple versions of a particular spot for a particular advertiser with 15 different tags. Those are the short endings telling you what number to call today. That requires discipline, I guess, and a certain consistency.
This offer void where prohibited.
See, well, we own.
But, you know, there's a guy on TV, and you've heard him, too. Call 1-800 something. Blah, blah, blah. He's got that voice, that sort of like a guttural thing. It's, you know, call now. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He must make $1 million. No one knows who he is. No one's ever seen him. But he's on the end of every infomercial on television. Whatever they're selling, whatever they're pitching. At the very end, I wait for him. And if somebody else does the tag, I'm thinking, oh, that's it. He must have retired or he's gone. But he's...
See, people who are listening to this right now who are in the business, who are veterans, and we're all doing the same thing. We're not listening as much to the content as to the voice on the end.
That's it, yeah.
And I know that guy. You know, I worked with that guy. Or
is that
I'd love
Jordan?
To emulate
that sounds him. Like Jordan Rich. Yes. I think, yeah.
It's been, and the funniest thing is when you did something 3 years ago and you had a hangover or you had a bad cold, that's the one that plays every single month.
That's the one.
They bring it back all the time.
Hey, you did a great job on that one. Oh, geez, no, please, not again.
Before we wrap up here and let you go, talk a little bit about the music and about the production that you do as a hobby, in a sense, but... You've done it at home in a beautiful studio at your house.
Oh, well, it's not beautiful. It sounds beautiful.
Well, it sounds beautiful.
That's what I meant. Again, it's just like, you know, we're homely people, but we sound beautiful.
Exactly. Faces for radio.
I know. Exactly. That says it best. But the studio at home started as just a hobby. I'm a drummer. And I know you're a keyboard player. You should come over and we should do some stuff. But... it started just a hobby, reason to come over and play the blues on a Sunday or a Saturday afternoon, have some beers, and record it and see what we get. Because at the time, all the musicians I was hanging out with weren't like big time or anything. They were like musicians that were hardworking, just working in bands, and they would break up and then join other bands and all that. But I would gather these guys and we would jam very frequently. Then after a while, I noticed, because of all the jamming, things started getting better. It's as they say, practice makes perfect. Everybody started sounding better. Mm. And then they would invite some other guy in who would say, hey, man, you know, we finally got to this one level here. I think we should invite this one guitar player in, or maybe we should have two horn players come in. And it just gradually grew like that. It was a very organic thing. And now, and the studio stayed the same. There's no Pro Tools or any digital editing or anything. Everything it's done live. And... It's real, honest music. So the most recent project I did was with a guy named Amadee Castanel. Amadee is the most wonderful guy, great sense of humor. He's from New Orleans. He's played with Dr. John and Aaron Neville and the Neville brothers. He was with Alan Toussaint for years. The TKO horn section was what he headed. And a couple of saxophone players and some trumpets and the guy named Joe Smith that he played with as well. These guys are... excellent musicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, really creative, top of the line. I can't say enough good things about them. And Amadee came over for a session one day with Chris Stovall Brown. Chris Brown is a blues musician who's exceptional. He's in Boston, and he just lays low. A lot of people don't know his name, but look for the Chris Stovall Brown name whenever you're looking to go out and see some blues music in a club, and you'll see this guy. He's an outstanding musician. And anyway, he brought Amadee over, and for some reason, Amadee and I got along really well. And I said to Amadee one day, if you ever want to do a project, not business, just for free, just come over and we'll jam. We'll have some fun. This is for fun. This is like for therapy. And so he said, well, that sounds like a fine time for me. And a year went by, and finally I got a call, and he said, is that offer still open? I said, yeah. And he said, because I've been playing up at the Grog with these guys called the All-Stars. Extremely talented guys. They're not just a bar band. These guys are extremely, they're hot. They're very good. They do all the hard stuff and make it look easy. Anyway, make a long story short, they came over and they barked out 10 songs. Boom, just like that, one right after the other, and they were perfect. Some of them originals that they had rehearsed with Amadee at the Grog. And the thing came out, it's tremendous. It's the best thing I think it's ever come out of my studio. And it just happened, and it's all live. There are no edits, none of that stuff. It's just happened.
So what happens to it now? I mean, is there a shot that this can be shared with a few of us humans, us mere mortals?
Yeah, I told Amadee, listen, if you can get this thing out there, and whether it gets airplay or just for sale or whatever, I mean, it's too good to just sit in the shelf here. Mm. So he just contacted me last week and said that he's found the guy who is going to shop it around, and we'll see what happens. So maybe something will happen, but I'll have to send you.
The fact that things are happening, I like the fact that things are happening. That's why I like doing what I do. It's never dull. It's always interesting, the creative process. I have one more important question that I've asked all of my guests and will continue to ask, and that is advice for anyone either pursuing a voiceover as a career, as a possible sideline, or people in the business in general. What's the takeaway here?
The takeaway is, as I look back on all the things we just talked about, mm-hmm. I have the best job at the radio station. I mean, I'm sure the guys on the air have a lot of fun. I remember what it was like being on the air. It's a whole different dynamic, though. There's a lot of stuff going on in your head while you're on the air, just trying to get through the day and connect and communicate. But on the other side, I've got the best job, and they always say that if you have a job that you love, then you really won't work a day in your life. And I feel that way right now. I'm 70 years old.
No!
70 years old today.
Get out of town.
Well, not today, but February 23rd, I was 70. Imagine that?
No, I can't imagine that.
Well, that's a mind blower to me, I'll tell you. But for all this time that I've been doing this business since 1971,
right,
where I didn't know what I wanted to do, and then I found something that I liked, that I wanted to do, I just pursued it. So that's my advice. If you find something that you really like, it may not pay the best money in the beginning. You'll find a way to make money. That's the money, as they say, the money will come. You know, it might take you a year, 2 years, sometimes 5 years before you start making money that you dream about. I'm still not there yet, but I'm making a living. I live in a nice house. I'm comfortable. I'm not rich, but I'm comfortable. And I think that's all I really wanted, was just to be comfortable. So I practiced. I got pretty good at what I did. And here I am today.
You're very good at what you do. I want to remind you of one moment we shared together years ago at the very same radio outfit that ultimately fired you and me not long after. It was the Christmas party before the firings. And it was in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And we both sensed that things weren't going well with the company.
Was that the one at the Hampshire House?
It might have been the Hampshire House.
That was a terrific place.
But the memory, and this is something I'll never forget.
Not the naked woman in the bathtub.
No, not the naked. No. That was Jack Nicholson, yeah, I believe. No, the memory involves deciding to, on the company dime, celebrate up a little cordial after the dinner. You and I went up to the bar, and I think
it was an open bar.
It was an open bar.
Yeah.
And you said, what's the best cognac you have in the house?
Yes.
And I said, yeah, we'll take two of them. We toasted each other.
Yes.
Right?
I remember it. I said, wait, we can't do this. The company will go nuts when they look at the bill. And we did. We toasted each other, and we had a really good time. And I remember that. That was at the
The
Hartwell House.
The Hartwell House.
That's right.
It began with an H. And we were there at the bar, and I looked at you, and we were holding these glasses, and we enjoyed ourselves a toast to whatever the hell the future was going to bring.
I think we may have done that twice.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think they were $60 a shot or something like that. Yeah. But that was the best drink I ever had.
That was terrific. I remember that. And I remember us both looking out of the the little fountain they had in a pool
yes.
out there, thinking, well, look at that. Isn't that cool? And I realized I'm talking to myself now. I think I've had just a little too much of that good stuff.
But we got one over on him. That's the way I look at it. Well, Bill Smith is, again, one of the most productive production guys we know of. He's everywhere, and he should be.
As are you, Jordan Rich.
I'm going to have to interview
you. We'll just swap chairs. Here.
Well, get yourself a podcast. We'll work this thing out. Have you thought about that, by the way?
And then I'll listen to yours. You can listen to mine.
Exactly. Well, Bill Smith is the guy's name, and a terrific broadcaster and a wonderful communicator. And I want to thank you so much for stopping by and doing this today.
Thank you for inviting me. This is the first time I've ever been on the other side of the microphone.
No kidding.
Being
really?
Asked all these questions. Yeah, like I'm some sort of a celebrity or something.
Whenever I'm interviewed by like a college radio station, I am more nervous than anything. I do you feel that way to be on the other side?
I almost said tata sauce.
You almost said tata sauce. Well, you've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced and hosted by Chart Productions, on the web at chartproductions.com. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Bill Smith. And continued success, my friend.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.